That was very sincere. Good job. Do you feel like you love Jesus?
Yeah.
Good. That's good. White people music is cool. White people music is so sincere. Do you feel sincere right now? Like, oh, you just love God so much. You just can't, oh, I mean it so much. Right? Good? So that's cool. That's white people music. Yeah, that's good. I'm white, so I like to sing it. I love them so much, I can't stand it. Music that comes from people of color, particularly the African-American tradition, can be sincere. I'm speaking this having learned from many of my friends. But for a lot of people of color, life has also been a lot of a struggle. There's been a lot of struggle. And so it's also fighting music. You're fighting for joy. Right? And God is really good. And God has taken care of me through things that I can't imagine. So here's what you're going to do. I learned this from my buddy. He's not here, so I'm just going to want you to look at your neighbor and look at him right in the eye so you can see him and say, God is really good.
God is really good.
God is really good. Okay. So we're going to do one more shout chorus. And it's going to be sincere. You can mean it with all your heart. But we're also going to fight a little bit. And so there's a little bit of yelling. And you might stand up. And you might shout a little bit. And, we're going to fight. We're going to just let a little bit of that inside out. And not just be sincere, but also kind of goof around a little bit. And fight a little battle. Does that sound all right?
Well, good morning. You guys doing all right? Doing better now. This is good. This has been last night. I don't know if everybody was able to be here last night, but man, I just really felt like I just really appreciated the way that Jeff and LaQue and Gino just talked to us last night. And I feel like God really spoke to me some really cool things. And so I just want to thank you for just your attitude. Thank you for the way, Gino, that you communicated your heart and just said some hard things to me, and that was really, really good. I appreciate it. Gino is going to be with us here at the Vineyard all weekend long, and so he'll be speaking at the weekend services. Hey, can I use your snare drum? Because I'm playing drums this weekend. Awesome. I thought I'd ask you in front of everybody. Yeah. Hey, today we get to hear a lot more from Jeff and LaQue. And so if you weren't here last night, Gino's a pastor down in the South Side of Chicago at South Suburban Vineyard. And Jeff and LaQue pastor the Mercy Vineyard in the, are you guys still in Northeast Minneapolis? Yeah, in Northeast Minneapolis, Northeast. And I've known them for a bunch of years. They are such a great couple. They are like the real deal in so many different ways. And so I just really appreciate them. And why don't you guys come back up and give us what you got.
Thank you. All right. Jeff needs to get a stool because he's an old man.
I'm an old man. I got this foot thing. I can't stand too long. If you were here yesterday, we gave you some worksheets to do, but I bet you forgot to do them. How many people did the worksheets? Oh, you have such a good church. Our church would never have done the worksheets. There's no way. I'd be like, who did the worksheets? They'd be like, worksheets? What are you talking about? Why don't you?
Okay, so here's what we're going to do is the most helpful thing is sometimes to actually articulate what you experience. And so whenever we do these workshops, we like to have a variety of interactions. And so what we're going to do now is I'm going to have you all stand up, and you're going to get into groups of three. So I want you to find two other people. And then what I want you to do is, while you're standing, although if you need to sit, please sit. But I want you to answer three questions, or whichever one strikes you as intriguing from the worksheets. What did you notice? What was encouraging? And what was challenging? So what did you notice? What was encouraging? Or what was challenging? And we're just going to talk for 5 minutes. All right? So you guys got 5 minutes, so you don't feel too intimidated, like you have to bare your soul or something. But three people, and I want you to just respond. What did you notice? What was encouraging? And what was challenging? Here, I would love it if there would be three brave people who would be willing to come up and just maybe share a little bit about what your group just observed and what you guys said. So three people, just three volunteers. Anyone brave enough to come up? And you do not have to have the right answer, okay? Stacy? Yes. That's right. Stacy, I met you last night. Do you want to come on up? And actually, well, I'm going to embarrass you, sorry. If you want to come up, and that way you can use the mic and share. And then I have two more people. Anybody else? You don't have to be brilliant. You just have to share what you guys talked about. Who else? Did I see a hand over here anywhere? Wait, did I see a hand back there? Yes. Justin. And I can't see who that is back there. In the red shirt. Yes. If you three would come up, and then just, yes. You can come on the stage, or you can come on the floor, whichever one you prefer. I tend to be shy. I know that you might not believe that, but I'm actually very shy. I'm an introverted. Maybe not shy. I'm introverted. And so sometimes I prefer the floor. So if you're a floor person, you can totally do that too. But Justin, why don't you share?
Hi, I'm Justin. I think that some of our group talked about how these questions uncover what Gino was talking about in culture. So how we just sort of like walk through life, and oftentimes, especially as a white male, I just think the norm for me is the norm for everybody. And those questions, in really gentle and also challenging ways, say, hey, that's just sort of a preference, or that's sort of the way that you're story has shaped the way you see that. There could be other folks that don't see it that way, and that doesn't mean they're wrong. That doesn't mean that their way is bad. So it pulled me back a bit to then see those cultural lenses that I so often just assume are the way.
Yeah, that's a great way to articulate it. Yeah, mm-hmm. Thank you. All right, can I have you come up? Yeah. And what's your name?
Oh, she doesn't have her mic yet.
Yeah.
My name is Heather. So two of the three of us out of our group did not do our worksheets. But what we did do is we just kind of talked about what was God speaking to us yesterday and kind of what was coming up in us during the speaking and worship. So for one of the people in our group, God was kind of bringing up that when he was younger, he got picked on by people from a different skin color than him. And so God was working on that and digging that up. And then another guy was from Canada. And when he moved to northern Minnesota about 18 years ago, he could tell the difference there was more racism in the States than there was in Canada. And then I didn't get to share, but I'll share with you guys. So for me yesterday during worship, I really just wept. And years ago, I was in this program with the YMCA co-coordinated, and it was called Reconnecting Students of Color. And so I was thinking of these sweet little girls and thinking about where they are now. And there's a well-known study, I don't know the name of it, but you could look it up online if you wanted to. And so they take little girls from different ethnicities and they lay out these paper dolls, and it's a gradation of skin color. And they'll ask, like, who do you think is the pretty one? And most of the girls will choose the one with the lightest skin, and they'll say, who do you think is the bad one? And most of the girls, black girls and white girls, everything in between, they'll choose the darkest skin one. And it was just really breaking my heart to think about those girls that I knew from the program and how they maybe see themselves as bad or ugly. And God says, you're fearfully and wonderfully made. And just how, just the adult, you know, racism where, you know, maybe they went to college and they're interviewing and they maybe won't get hired as quickly as somebody else. Number one, because they're black. Number two, because they're women. So that was breaking my heart. So I know that's just a sliver of, like, this really saddens God, and that's how I was feeling, like a sliver of that sadness. So yeah.
Thanks for sharing, Heather. And Stacy, you want to come up real quick? And hey.
Heather, thanks for sharing. I just wanted to clarify something about that story. In K through 6, I felt picked on, but there wasn't a black person in my class. And actually, I know a lot of those classmates love me. But as Gino talked last night, and I felt his strength and conviction and that aggressiveness, it just made me realize that that's what I struggle with, I think, when I meet some people of black color. And to look at that difference and to understand it is really what was set on my heart last night.
Thank you. Okay, so what was the question? Just share whatever you were talking in your group.
Mm-hmm. Holy cow. We were talking in my group about the viewpoints and perspectives of and how you come about forming those based on life experiences and how vastly different they can be based on how, you know, for example, finding God came to me more so by my self-educated journey and as an adult, more than growing up with having church and God and friends in my life, whereas people in my group have had that or may not have had that, and how inner strength comes, how we get inner strength, and whether that comes from yourself or from family-oriented. So, yeah.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I really appreciate the people that came up and shared. Like, one of the things that I know about this conversation is that it can, and you guys witnessed it, it can bring up a lot of unexpected emotion and a lot of unexpected just realization from, like, your life. I really appreciate that you guys were willing to stand and talk about that. So what we're going to do is actually next have a story from someone here in your church, because this is about stories and about what God is doing, and about what God is doing here specifically. So I'm going to hand this over to Brenda, and then we'll come back up.
All right. Well, I want to introduce Makosa. Some of you may know Makosa. This is Makosa. Welcome, Makosa. I've known Makosa for over 10 years, and we've kind of journeyed together in spiritual growth and leadership development, and it's been a real privilege just to watch Makosa navigate a multi-ethnic marriage and family issues, and then being in this church, being in a white city, a white church, and just watch how God has moved in her life. And also just how much I feel like I need Makosa in my life. And I know she has a lot of friends in the church that are some of her best friends. And I really appreciate just watching her have these beautiful relationships with people who are different from her. And I feel like she's just has a grace for us and even our fumbling and bumbling. And she doesn't get, you know, easily offended when we don't recognize or honor her culture. And I feel like she's a teacher. She's helping us learn, and that God will even use her a lot in the Duluth Vineyard to help us along in this. I know we met this week and talked, and she had many conversations with people of color about this conference and how they're feeling about about the fact that we were having this conference and, you know, just the different responses about whether or not they would feel comfortable coming. And it was so interesting to me. She could have conversations with them and sort of stand in the gap and create a bridge, you know, and I could hear those things because they would say things to her that they maybe wouldn't say to me. And it was just so enlightening and helped me pray this week. And so I really, I work with her a lot on women's events and other leadership things, and she's such a servant, and Jesus is on her, and I really wanted her to just share for about 15 minutes this morning about what her journey, her story has been like here at Duluth Vineyard, and her commitment to us as family, too. Love you.
Thank you. I really love this church. This is my church. I call it that, my home. I'll give you a little background about me. Some of you, I've known you for a long time, and I don't think I've ever said the whole background. I'll start at the beginning. I was born in Zambia, 10 degrees south of the equator. My parents are born from a line of pastors, and so I'm a PK kid, five generations back. So Jesus has always been like, I think I was like three, and do you love the Lord? Right? Like, because that's what you do. And we moved to the States to plant churches in the United States, which, yes, people do that. That's a thing. Zambia is 86% Christian. And so my parents felt really called to the United States because they came here and they were like, there's a bunch of people that don't go to church. And why not? And so we were Mennonite Brethren. We came with the Mennonite Brethren Foundations. If you know anything about Mennonites, they're not the Yoder Mennonites with the caps on their head. They drive Oldsmobiles, but they're very, very conservative. And we moved to the middle of nowhere, Heston, Kansas. And my dad, which I love him for this, was always looking for Jesus in the midst of it, right? Like always looking for Jesus, always looking for this spirit thing. Like he couldn't figure it out. And we had met some really interesting people in Kansas City when we moved there that were Mennonite people that met some guy. His name was John Wimber. And they kept saying, Arna, you got to come. I don't know what's happening there. There's something happening. We go there and we pray for hours. And my dad's like, for hours? And I remember my parents like very distinctly talking about, we're going to go to Kansas City. We don't know how long we're going to be there. And Kansas City was a trek because it was like, I don't know, the late 80s, early 90s. And they went to this conference and they came back and they weren't the same. And they experienced the Holy Spirit in this amazing way. And it was like the beginning of this journey for our home, our family. They left Kansas City and looked for a Vineyard church immediately, right? Because that's what happens when you experience God. They found one in the middle of a white community and walked in the doors on a Sunday. And the senior pastor walked up to them and said, you are supposed to be the senior pastor of this church, or not? And that was our induction into the Vineyard. My dad, of course, was not freaked out by this at all. My mom, who was very, very like, was like, let's talk about some things. Number one, it was an all-white community. There was one black family that moved there a year before, and it's the first black family that had ever moved in the city. We would be the second African-American family, and not African-American, African-British, because that's my background. It was the first church that had musical instruments because we were loud and awkward, and all the other churches just did hymns, which is really good. Lots of really great conversations with pastors and pastors' kids. We also had tons of cultural issues that we knew we were going to face in the midst of that. Now, traditionally, that would not be the smartest place to plant a church or take over a church as an all-black family. But my dad believed that that's where we were called and that's what we were supposed to do. So for 14 years, my parents pastored that church there, and we learned a lot about Jesus. I learned a lot of things. Number one, going to an all-white school as the only black kid that was there that was not adopted. I wasn't like other kids. My background wasn't the same, and I really didn't fit in. And I think in high school, I realized this struggle of, who am I? right? Like, who am I? And that's a natural thing in high school, but I think when I was in high school, I was like, I am not like anybody else here. I don't have the same background. I don't have the same theories. My parents speak three languages. Like, I don't know how to blend in. And so I moved into college, went to a school that wasn't too far from there, met my husband, who my husband at the time, who was a very white, blonde-haired, blue-eyed man. And he brought me here. And I used to say that he tricked me into moving here because I didn't know where I was moving, honestly, but that's why I was called here. I think God always has a plan and a reason for where he brings you, even when you don't want it or even when you don't understand it. And so I walked into Duluth looking for a home, right? Looking for this place that was the Vineyard. I knew, I actually think I looked in the phone book. At the time, the Vineyard was under Vineyard, not under churches. And for 6 months, I just wandered around looking for churches that like knew Jesus, knew the Holy Spirit, and spoke my language. Had intimate experiences with worship and often ended up kind of frustrated. And then I walked into this church. It was one of those moments I know I won't forget. And I tell my friends this often, that walking into this church, I felt there was someone at the door, Lynn, who I love, and she said, "Welcome home." I don't even know why I said that. Not even knowing me. I love it. I love how Jesus does that. And I spent the next 2 years of my life crying tears, right? Like we all do. I have always been kind of the only black person in the midst of stuff. In this movement, I fell in love with it as a young kid and recognizing a lot of differences. National conferences, we'd go, and sometimes they'd say, "Hey, are you? Is your dad an associate pastor?" I'm like, "No, he's a senior pastor." And they'd be like, "Are you sure?" "Yes, I'm sure. He's a senior pastor." Having lots of interesting conversations where people would talk about race and would never invite us into those conversations. Making assumptions about groups, but we love them. They were our people. They were our friends. We did ministry together, and sometimes that made it really, really hard. And so my experience in this church, to go back to that, I have a daughter, she's 2, she's a biracial kid, and she doesn't know any difference. This is her home too. Small groups was this place that I, if anybody knows me, I'm always pointing people to small group. "Oh, you have a problem? Go to small group. Oh, your foot hurts? Go to small group, get some prayer." But small group really was where I began to figure out who I was and what God had called me to do. I spent a ton of time in small group having these interesting conversations, right? You meet people. They make a mistake. And then God would prompt me and say, "Are you ready to have the conversation?" "Well, do we have to?" "I'm okay if you're okay." Right? But I had to stop and I had to say something. That's one of the steps you have to do. Sometimes being that person of color in the room isn't always the easiest. It's not always fun. But if we're not willing to have the conversation, then what is it? It's left unsaid. It's unsaid hurt. And it doesn't get healing. After the conversation would often have change, sometimes really awkward. Because anytime you talk about race and you say something about race, people get hypersensitive. And so the conversation sometimes would become a reality, and the reality would be super weird. And then you're like, "I wish that didn't happen." And then we have another conversation and say, "This is God's grace for you. I love you. Just be normal." We build this relationship. In this church, that's what we do. We build relationships, and I'd build relationships with people. And in those relationships, as I was even telling my friends, I call them my home team. So I was telling my home team that I was doing this. We had these great conversations where they were like, "We forgot you were black." Right? Like, because you build this relationship, you work with these people, you do these things, and you just forget, right? Because you're in the middle of it, and you're having these connections. And so, and in building those relationships, we always have to remember there is a difference. There is a place, and there is always a conversation, whether spoken or unspoken. So, diversity is hard. The only person that did it really well was Jesus. He could go in and out of crowds. He could talk to the most amazing people. He could make them feel special. He was like the best navigator of this all. There isn't a formula for this in our church. And so if you feel like, man, if I do A and B, every single black person that walks in the door, I'm going to shake their hand and be like, hey, hey, it's not a formula. It's Jesus. You're going to screw up, right? I screw up. I screw up all the time. Sometimes I don't know what to say. Sometimes I say the wrong things. And you just have to go back and say, I am so sorry. That was my stupidity. My assumption. If you don't know, just ask. I know by standing up here in this church that that is what I'm saying. I'm saying just ask. And what that means for me is I have to humbly come before my God and ask him how to respond. But just ask. Inviting people to the table. This is something that I have started doing for quite some time. The best way to get to know people, invite them into your home. Do you want people to feel loved and appreciated? The best conversations happen around a table. It's awkward. It's weird. They may not like your food. You may screw up your food. Order a pizza. Grab some pop. It'll be fine. So what's been healed in me in this church? 10 years ago, I got a word about diversity and how God has called me to this, and I felt very conflicted about it. Number one, I didn't want to be that girl. Number two, diversity is really awkward. There's crazy extremists on one side and non-compliant people on the other. And I didn't fit into a specific group. And I think that's a really big piece of like how Jesus is using me. Because I don't fit into any group, I fit into all groups. And so Jesus created me not necessarily to be this person that specifically fits in African American culture or white culture, but he's called me to be the in-between, the bridge, the connector. In that, God is using me. So, couple last thoughts. So what happens if Jesus calls you into things that you don't want to do, as he did me sometimes? Reconcile that. I spent time figuring out who I was. I spent time figuring out what God said about me and my culture. I dealt with a little bit of racism on myself towards my own black culture, right? If I'm honest. And at the end of all of that, Jesus was there, opening his arms to me, saying, "Will you trust me with this?" Honesty with my friends and the people around me, having tough conversations, and always willing to hear what Jesus has to do. If we follow him in the midst of all of this, our church will be healed. Our movement will be healed, and the people around us will be healed. And so I leave you with one thought. This is my church. I feel called here. I love the people here. Who is God calling you to love? Who is God calling you to invite to the table? And when is he calling you to do that? Tomorrow? Today? Next week? Don't take too long to think about it. Just respond to what God has for you. Thank you.
Yeah. Of course you're a Mennonite. Yeah. That explains everything. Mennonites are crucial.
Yes, they're amazing. Okay. So, I thought it might be helpful for you guys to get a little, we'll give you a little like what to expect the rest of today. I think it's been really powerful because I feel like what we're going to talk about is a lot of ideas. But I really loved how this ended up working out with, like, we started with stories, because it's about stories. It's about individuals who live lives, who are trying to figure out how to live life together. And that's, I think that's what we've really touched on, both last night and then this morning. And so Jeff and I, we have a whole bunch of, like, information and a lot of educational tools that'll kind of help you get a framework for, okay, so when we talk about differences, what do we actually mean? And when we talk about how we have a society that is racist, what do we mean by that, right? Because we're not talking about individual racism, we're talking about there's a system that is broken. So what do we mean by that? So we're going to talk about those things. But it really, like, it starts with stories. It starts with our stories. And so I really just, I love how God orchestrated that.
I almost just want Makosa to come talk for another half hour. I don't really want to say anything. That's like, because white people are fixers. We like give us a job to do, you know? And so the thing that always happens at the end of a diversity training like this is all the white people say, great, how do we fix the problem? How do I fix it? Give me a tool. And the honest truth is, a lot of learning to cross cultures is learning to just sit with pain and sit with awkwardness and just listen really well without having a solution. I mean, that's like, what just happened with Makosa to me is maybe like the biggest thing that's going to happen this weekend. Is the gift of a black woman who's been in this church forever being willing to get up here and say, here's like my experience and my life, and you're being willing to just listen without interrogating, without, you know, well, what you really mean is, or what you, you know, really what matters, and just to hear that, I almost feel like we could just be done. And the reason I'm hesitating is I'm going to start giving you a whole bunch of like information and like little tips and little like, here, we can do this or that. And it's good. This stuff's good. Because it's like, if you're going to have cross-cultural relationships, we may as well get all the information we can to do them as best we can. That's a kind and loving thing. But that's just sort of like, this is just sort of like step one. And step two is actually go try to like meet some people and love them and listen. And you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So all that said, we'll do some stuff. We'll do some, here's how to do things. Like 19 minutes, 10:20, is that okay? Okay. So I want to talk about frames for understanding cultural difference. This is from a book by Patty Lane called The Beginner's Guide to Crossing Cultures. It's a great book. I'm going to give you like the 15-minute version. And
you should know there's actually a ton of books out there that have lots of different models for understanding cultures and understanding different frames and lenses through which we can like experience the world. And so this is just one of them. But we found it very helpful. And she writes from a Christian's perspective, and she's just, it's really like, you know, it's non-academic too, which is I've really appreciated.
And she's like a middle-aged Baptist lady from Texas. I interviewed her, and it was the funniest thing. Like, this book is helpful. You wouldn't think, like, she's like this 50-year-old Sunday school Baptist teacher, Sunday school teacher. Like, anyway.
Yeah. And she's worked with a lot of different people from a lot of different backgrounds. So
one of the ideas that she brings out that's very helpful is misattribution. This is one of the places where cultural conflict happens.
This is on page 9 if you're looking for the notes.
And what misattribution is, quite simply, is interpreting someone else's actions based on my cultural assumptions. That I have some cultural assumptions. Somebody else does something, and I interpret what they did through my grid. Okay? So I'll give you an example from the history of our church. Our church is actually still largely a white church. We're growing in diversity. But we're still, like, if you walked in, you'd think white church. But for 11 years, we've talked about crossing cultures. We've talked about diversity. So everybody in our church knows we care about diversity. We care about welcoming people in. If you don't like that, you don't last long in our church because you hear about it all the time. So early on, we were maybe 100, 150 people. Does anybody remember Duluth Vineyard when it was that size? Any lifers here? A few of you? Okay. And so one day, a woman from Argentina who's dating somebody in the church comes into our church. And you know, it's obvious, right? I mean, we're all mostly white and there's this Argentinian woman. And everybody wants to be nice. So everybody kind of flocks around and tries to be really nice to her. Hey, how are you doing? You know? So she starts to get to be friends with people in the... You know what that's like, Makosa, right? Yeah, okay. She starts to be friends with people in the church. So it's going well, right? I mean, and we're all like, yay, we're like getting a diversity win. And we'd sing a song in Spanish and everybody would be secretly looking at her to see if like, it's just like really, hey, it's like we're singing in Spanish, you know? And so she gets to be really good friends with one of our kind of key leaders in our church. And one day, she says to this person, and it's in the middle of winter, and we've discovered anybody from a warmer climate who moves to Minnesota, you got to see how they do through the first winter. That's like, right. So middle of winter, she says to this leader in our church, who is way on board with the multi-ethnic thing. Just to be clear, this woman is like, she's into it. Like, we're going to do this thing. I'm a little depressed and lonely, she says to her. I'm a little depressed and lonely. We're like, welcome to winter. And so they go away. And so my friend, a white woman, a few days later, sends an email and says, hey, you said you were a little depressed and lonely. Do you want to get together and talk about that? It's a nice thing to do, right? And a few days go by, doesn't hear back, sends another email. Hey, just checking in. You know, you said you were a little depressed and lonely. Maybe we could talk or something. Then leaves her a voicemail. I mean, she's at this point, white girl's getting nervous. Like, I feel like a stalker. But, you know, hey, you know, this is not a, I heard you're a little depressed and lonely. You know, you said it. Maybe we could get together. And still doesn't hear back. So at this point, white girl goes, this is like, I need to back off, right? I mean, I may be pushing in a little much. Maybe I should have. A few weeks, months go by. We don't see this Argentinian woman anymore. She hasn't been coming around. And finally, you know, she's kind of gone. And then somebody, I don't even remember exactly how it happened. We get in touch with her. And she says, you know, I can't go to your church anymore. You're so unfriendly. You're so cold and uncaring. Like, what? And she says, well, I said I was depressed and lonely and nobody did anything. And white girl's like, I left you two emails and a voicemail. In Minnesota, you might get a restraining order for two emails and a voicemail. Like, that might be, the police might show up. Like, what's your... And she's like, nobody did anything. If it was Argentina and I said I was depressed and lonely, you would have been at my house for lunch the next day. You would have been in my house. You would have been coming over. You would have brought people. Now listen, this is the tragedy of misattribution. White girl was doing the best she could to be kind. She didn't do anything wrong. She was pushing the edges of how far she could socially push in. But Argentinian woman said that was nothing. Just from, and she wasn't being snotty or anything. She's just like, from where I come from, you didn't even try. You didn't even like start trying to care about me. That's misattribution, okay? Both sides interpreting the other person's actions based on their own culture. And so what we want to try to do is begin to understand cultures that are different than ours so that we can understand and cross cultures a little bit better. Does that make sense? Okay, so I'm going to do I have 12 minutes left to explain these five frames. So I'm actually going to spend the longest. Are you on page 9? Do you have these five? Yeah. I'm going to spend the longest on the first one because it's the hardest to understand, and it comes a lot out of our marriage, so I can tell you stories.
Actually, it's really appropriate for Minnesota, too.
It is, actually, because yeah. Minnesota's a sort of interesting place.
We're interesting.
Yeah. Actually, isn't that, why isn't there direct and indirect down here?
Because that's part of...
Because this is the high and low, yeah, okay. I want to describe the difference between high-context cultures and low-context cultures, okay? And this is maybe the trickiest one to understand, and it will... It's very helpful. In a high-context culture... Okay, you need to put your thinking caps on. Follow me now. The context of what is said, that is, what's going on around something, is as important as the content of what is said. The context of the communication is as important as the content of the communication. In a low context culture, just the content matters. The context doesn't matter very much. America is a very low context culture. The Vineyard is an extremely low context movement. Okay? So let me give you like an example. One big deal in the vineyard is pastors don't dress up, and you don't have to dress up for church. Do you guys like that you don't have to dress up for church? And for a lot of people, they come to the vineyard, and that's a high value. I don't have to dress up for church. I don't have to. I can just throw on. Though I did, I'm wearing my good shoes, which is why I have to sit. But these are my nice shoes. These are my preaching shoes. Otherwise, I have a pair of blue running shoes that I wear all the time. And in a low-context culture, it doesn't matter. If I wore my blue running shoes, you'd listen to me anyway, right? And if I had a suit on, you wouldn't think I was any more important than if I didn't have a suit on. Who cares? But in a high-context culture, the context matters. You might think, if you're not wearing a suit, you must not take God very seriously. But no, I mean, you might say, like, why would you show up to God's house and wear jeans? There's a vineyard pastor in Florida. This is so interesting, the vineyard. He's got one of the coolest multi-ethnic churches in the vineyard. And he started wearing a sport coat every week because he discovered that some of the diverse people in his church found it a little offensive that he dressed down so much. And so he started dressing up a little. And all the other vineyard pastors in his area got really offended that he was dressing up for church. And I just thought, that is the dumbest thing. Like, if there's like anything you're going to... Because it was so like, oh, it's the vineyard. We don't dress up. We can't dress up. It wouldn't be the vineyard if we dressed up. Like, get a life. I mean... And I mean, I'll tell you the truth. Every once in a while, I'll wear something a little nicer to preach in. And the African Americans, we have three services at our church. All the African Americans go to the same one. So we always say we have two white churches and one diverse church. They always notice if I'm dressed a little nicer. They always notice. And it's appreciated. I'll tell you a story. This comes from Patty Lane's book that's really helpful to understand this. Are you starting to follow me on the high context, low context? Let me tell you another story that illustrates it. A lot of Asian cultures are... higher context. So Patty Lane tells a story. There's a mostly white denomination, not the vineyard, but some probably Baptist, something, whatever. And there's in this district of this denomination, there's one Japanese pastor. Okay? All the other pastors were, it's one Japanese pastor. And they have an annual, like, supper or whatever, like, meeting. And they decided they give an award every year to one pastor, and they decided the Japanese pastor's done a great job, so they give him he's going to receive an award for, you know, pastor of the year or most valuable pastor or, you know, whatever. So the Japanese pastor's really honored that he's going to get this award. So he shows up to the dinner. He's got his suit on. He's got his family with him. They're all dressed up. They show up early. They sit down at a table. Now, this is... He's very high context. The denomination is very low context. It's kind of vineyardish, right? So he's there. Everybody else comes in, jeans and shoes, and they kind of throw out like a sandwich tray real quick, and everybody eats a little bit. And then the head of the district gets up, and he tells a few jokes, and, you know, they kind of go over some of the business really quick, and then he says, we give away an award every year, and our pastor, friend over here, he's the one who receives the award, and everyone kind of goes, yeah, it's nice, way to go, kind of slap him on the back, and then the meeting's over, see you guys next year. Now, the intention in that moment was to honor this pastor, right? But the pastor leaves absolutely offended. Because if I'm going to receive an award, there's going to be a ceremony where I receive an award, I would think you would dress up. I would think somebody might explain who I am and what I've done. I would think I might be invited up to make a speech. There might be a plaque or something that I receive. And there might be like a nice meal that would... But instead, I showed up to this church basement, and we had like Subway sandwiches, and we told a few jokes, and then it was just done, and I didn't even talk. Do you feel that misattribution? Because this is low context culture, and he's high context. He's saying, like, the context matters. The content is the same. You win the award. But the context of how it was said was so informal and sort of thrown together that he doesn't receive at all. There's another thing that's helpful with high context and low context cultures. I'm going to talk about apologies.
This might be specific to us, but yeah.
No. It's in the book. She says it. In a low context culture, what matters is not the long-term context of something, but what just most recently happened. That's in a low-context culture. In a high-context culture, I take the long-term in view. So this affects how apologies work. In a low-context culture, if I find out I've been offending Michael for the last 3 years, I didn't even know it, I've been calling him Mike. Don't call Michael Mike. And he's deeply hurt. And then one day I say, you don't like to be called Mike. I'm really sorry. In a low-context culture, you're supposed to go, oh, it's fine, I forgive you, it's great. Okay? That's just, whatever. Doesn't that feel Christian? Just forgive. In a high-context culture, time matters. History matters. And if I find out I've been offending you for 3 years, and I say, I'm sorry, in a high-context culture, the response is generally, you're sorry now? That's interesting. That's an interesting piece of data. Now I will wait and see how you behave. And if your behavior changes, then we can have like some reconciliation between us. But just saying, I'm sorry, I don't really know what's going to happen next. It doesn't mean that there's like no willingness to forgive, but it's just, I'd like to see it. It's not just what you said, I'd like to see what you're going to do. So I don't actually, like, I don't apologize to like you very much.
He's really good at apologies, actually. Jeff is really great.
But Americans are good at apologies. You just say you're sorry. You don't have to do anything. It's easy.
Right.
But what I found is that if I figure out, like, I've been doing something that's really unhelpful, I just stop doing it. And after a while, like, you generally will go, oh, you stopped. That's good. I forgive you. Do you feel it? But just the I'm sorry is like, let's just blow off every other thing I did and now just totally pretend like our relationship is fixed. In high context culture, they're not going to do that.
And high context is actually, it's a lot about nonverbal, like nonverbal communication. That's really huge. And it's interesting because in Minnesota, it's actually, Minnesota is considered a bit of a middle culture, a middle context kind of culture, where there are some ways in which we are very American and we do directly communicate. But then lots of things of like, if you grow up Minnesotan, there's just things that you pick up about habits that you have, behaviors that you have, that, like taking the last piece of something. When we moved here, like, Jeff was totally bewildered. He's from Chicago. He just takes what he wants because that's what Chicago, and apparently that's what Chicagoans do or something.
If you want it, you take it.
And he would take the last piece, and people would be, like, kind of upset with him, but they wouldn't know why they were upset with him.
Yeah, I had a friend who's like, I figured out why I didn't like you when we first met. You kept taking the last pit brownie. Like, you would take it all the time. And I was like, why are you a jerk? I just call it the Chicago advantage, man. I was like, nobody else wants the brownie. I'll take the brownies. It's cool with me.
Oh,
but you know, the interesting thing is Minnesotans do a lot of self-hatred over what they call passive aggressiveness. Sometimes Minnesotans are just high context, and that means they're doing indirect communication. And that's actually okay, right? I mean, sometimes you can avoid fights by not always having to go head to head and just say what you mean. Sometimes you can just like kind of like infer what somebody else means and then kind of like work around it and not, that's not a bad thing. It's the way a lot of cultures in the world work. So
neither of these are good or bad. It just is, right? And so the more in touch we are with how we are operating and how other people are operating, the more helpful it is when we're like butting heads and having conflict because we're operating under different assumptions. So
I can do the last four in 5 minutes.
Yeah, you have to.
Okay, these last four are easy and I'll do them in 5 minutes. Activity, there's being cultures and doing cultures. In a doing culture, the key is what you accomplish. In a being culture, a lot of life is about just being together. My friend Mark Fields tells a great story. He does vineyard missions, and he went to used to go to Latin America. Latin America is often a lot of being cultures, where being and relationship is more important than accomplishment. Said the first few times he went to somewhere in South America, I can't remember, I think it was Chile, but I don't remember what country it was, he would show up with a list of 10 things to do, and they'd get in a room, and they'd start working on it, and they'd butt heads, and they'd fight, and he'd be there for 10 days, and at the end of 10 days, he felt like he got nowhere, and he's frustrated, and he'd go home, and it felt like this happened to him like two or three times. He would just show up, and then he gets an idea. He shows up, and instead of like having his list, he just lets the South Americans sort of set the agenda. And the first night, they're like, "Let's stay up late and drink wine and eat sausages." I was like, okay. So the next day, it's like, "Let's go to the beach. We'll go hang out at the beach." And they go, you know, next day, it's like, "Let's go to the mountains." And he's there for 10 days, and he's getting like on edge because he's got a list in his pocket, right? 9 days, they're just kind of talking, playing. So the last day, he's like, you know, and he says, and then finally the leader says, "Hey, did you have a list? You always have a list." And he pulls the list out, and he said in like 2 hours, they just knocked the whole thing out. Because once trust and relationship had been established, the doing could just happen. Because the being had gone in front of it. Leadership. There's formal hierarchical leadership. I need to sit on this one a little bit because it's the vineyard. Some cultures value formal and hierarchical leadership structures where it's very clear who's in charge, and there's titles, and there's, you know, like a very clear, and then there's informal egalitarian where it's more like, "Hey, we're just buddies, you know, I mean, I'm like kind of in charge, but like it's cool, we're all the same here." Which one do you think is the vineyard? Which one? The second one, informal egalitarian, right? And if you go particularly a lot of black churches, it's very formal. You know, pastor such and such, elder such, like you know where you fit in the ranks. And it's tempting to think that the informal one is better, isn't it? Doesn't it feel like, oh, it's like nicer if we're more just not so structured, not so... But here's what happens. Both can work okay. In informal church, in white vineyard church structure, it's kind of nice that we're informal and we're like not so... But you know what? Guess what? There's somebody in charge. There's some lines. There's some boundaries. And in this kind of church, you don't see them until you hit them. And then when you hit them, you find out they're there. Right? I mean, don't try to pull some bad design past Michael. You'll find out that someone's in charge. You'll find out there's some boundaries. Don't try to put a bad bass player up in my church. You'll find out. Right? Both can be abused. It's easy to see the abuses of the formal hierarchical where it's like, oh, like that guy thinks he's... But you know what? Everybody knows. That's the beauty of that kind of church. You know who you got to ask. Right. If you want to do something, you know who's in charge of it. You know what they're going to do. So we really got to take off the snotty, like, we're better because we're less formal thing. Okay? Okay, I'll go really fast now. Identity, individual versus collective, whether you find your identity just in yourself or whether you find your identity in the larger group. When Lake Q, do you want to tell a story?
No, you tell faster.
Okay, I'm faster. I'm a doing culture. Get things done fast. When Lake Q's graduating from high school, I had a number of Asian American friends who had this experience. They'd say, "What am I going to major in college? Going to college, what am I going to major in?" And their friends would, and they'd be like, "What do my parents think? What do my parents think I should major in?" And their friends would say, "Don't worry about what your parents think. What do you want? You're not trapped into what you're..." And for somebody from a collective culture, that's the most insane statement they've ever heard. "Those are my parents. This is my family. This is who I am." Like, to not ask my parents what I should major in college is like chopping off my hand. But in an individual culture, it's like, what do you want? Fulfill your own destiny. That makes sense? And then finally, time, limited versus abundant. Time culture is an abundant time culture. We think there's plenty of time. We can go all day. But because we're a limited time culture, we're going to be done now.
All right, so we're going to take a little bit of a break. Yeah, okay, she wants to explain that, yeah.
In a limited time culture, stuff's got to be done when it's done. Right? Like, the time is a limited thing. We only have so much. If you say it's going to be an hour, it's going to be an hour. And it's actually, there's somebody did a study. I saw it in a book. And they compared different cultures. And they said, when is a person considered late? When are they considered rude? And when does a person give up? So, like, say you're going to meet someone at a coffee shop. And in white culture, white American culture, it's like 5 minutes you're considered late. So you get 5 minutes before you're late. You got 10 minutes before you're rude.
Or it's like 15 or something like that.
It's not like that. And like at 15 or 20, they give up. They leave. In other cultures, it was literally like 1 hour, 2 hours, 5 hours. You weren't even late if you're 45 minutes after you said you'd be there. And they wouldn't give up and leave for like 3, 4, 5 hours. Now, I'm a very limited time person. That blows my mind. I do not understand that. But, I mean, this is one that's easy if you've traveled to other places. You know, they say church starts at 10. My friend Tommy is African American, and he had a housewarming party, and it started at 6, and I got there at 6:30, and he answers the door, and I'm there with a couple of friends, and he literally turns around to his wife and goes, "LaVivian, the white people are here." And nobody else showed up for like another hour, you know. But I got to hang out with Tommy, so it was good. It's fun. So, there we go. There's some frames.